morning, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving week, and welcome to episode 35 of the Pinstripe, or the Bomber Brothers podcast, part of the Pinstripe Alley community of podcasts. Sean and Ryan continuing to take you through the off season, and Sean, finally something to talk about because the Yankees made a blockbuster trade since we last recorded.
Are you talking about trading away Nestor Cortes or trading for Zach Granite?
Both, I guess.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's really gotten my blood pumping.
Oh yeah, it's officially hot stove season.
Well, I mean, things have gotten off to a faster start than I thought. I mean, the Braves and the White Sox are certainly not shying away from making moves, and you got to get the feeling that Cashman's just kind of waiting in the waters to pounce on something. And I mean, I'm going to miss Cortes. I thought he did a nice job with the Yanks. I mean, we talked about it last week with the DFA, but I think his value, it's one of those things that was the numbers didn't really dictate his value to the team. And very rarely do I really think that is true. I would say the only two Yankees that I think were more valuable than their numbers say are Didi and Cortes Jr. from last season anyway. But yeah, I mean, you know, we got that coveted international bonus slot money, which us Jason Dominguez, which is, you know, he looks like a major leaguer and he's 16 years old, so that's good. But we got some more money to spend. And then, yeah, they got a depth outfielder, which the Twins are. And I guess we could talk about a little bit the Fangraphs event we attended last Thursday, because I thought some interesting things were said at that. One of them being that the Yankees are, you know, pretty coveted for how smart they are. And I think the Twins are a pretty relatively advanced organization. Just judging by the way they have their team constructed, it's not something I would, you know, it's not Mariners or Rockies-esque. So, you know, I don't know if they think they have anything in this guy, or it's maybe just a guy on a minor league deal with some depth. So we'll see.
Yeah, never know with Cashman and the Yankees what becomes of some of these seemingly minor trades that don't move the needle at all.
Talkman.
Like Mike Talkman, yeah, exactly.
Gio Urshela, minor league deal.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But, yeah, so those were the two things. And then the only other news of the week, which is actually pretty significant, I would think, is the Yankees hired a minor league female hitting coach, and I believe she's the first female hitting coach in professional baseball, so albeit the minor leagues. And she worked for the Astros, which probably, you know, she probably is going to tell all the Yankee minor leaguers how to cheat. but no, I mean, you know, it's a really cool story. She has two master's degrees, so just, you know, I only have one and damn near killed me, so I'm pretty envious of that. That's pretty impressive. She speaks Spanish, and you know, she has worked with Driveline and everything. So she checks all the boxes for a modern hitting coach, and it's cool to see the Yankees expanding their talent pool by two by including both genders. So multiplying increasing the candidates by 100%, never a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a great thing that the organization did. One that came at a good time, because the organization's been kind of, I don't know, personally kind of annoying lately with all this Ellsbury stuff and grievances over just a few million dollars. And I don't know. I don't know what you think. Like, obviously Jacoby Ellsbury was a terrible contract, but this just seems silly. Like, just, you signed a terrible deal, just pay him his money and move on. Like, they've been hiding Ellsbury for the past 2 years, and now that they want to try to cut out a coupon and save $10 million or something like that, now they're willing to kind of thrust this back into the spotlight over this. And I mean, I don't know, just reading Rosenthal's report the other day about, like, what exactly this grievance is about, that he sought medical help from elsewhere, and which was, like, treated to just try to reduce inflammation and things like that. Like, I don't know. This just seems really silly to me. I don't even know why they would go through this all for just to save a what in the scheme of things is pocket change.
I guess they think it'll not count against this competitive balance tax, I'm going to assume, and that's part of their motivation. But I don't know. I mean, if Ellsbury really saw this doctor and took some steroids or something like that, then I think they'll come out not looking too bad, because it'll seem like, no, we don't want our players doing this, and this is why, blah, blah, blah. They'll have a spin they could go by. Now, if this turns out to be a wild goose chase and nothing comes up from it, and if they then they really seem petty. So if they really have a smoking gun, so to speak, and they have some solid evidence that Ellsbury did seek treatment that he shouldn't have been seeking, then I'll think differently of it. But for right now, I mean, I agree with you. It seems petty. And I thought what Lindsay said on the Fangraphs thing was that Cashman had told Ellsbury to stay home because they didn't have to give him a per diem.
Yeah.
So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that
but,
was
funny. Anyway. So yeah, that seems a little iffy. And then obviously, you know, the Chapman extension has, so there's been some things this postseason that kind of makes your stomach turn, but the Ellsbury thing, I'll withhold judgment until I see how it plays through. You know, the Yankees actually gave out a lot of postseason shares this year, which is great. After the debacle last year. So congrats to all the people that got the postseason shares that helped behind the scenes that got screwed last year.
Yeah, 114 grand a piece, I think. That obviously for some lower level staffers is huge. So that's great. That I think I read that they distributed to more people than anyone else in the league, and last year they were the lowest number of people split within the league. So
it makes
good
you think
them to make like, that change.
Yeah. I hope David Roberts is not as a bad guy as he's seeming right now, because he seemed like such a good guy to root for.
Yeah.
And definitely gif-able. I mean, that much is clear. So anyway, do you have anything else of what's going on? Because really, I mean, I saw the report that the Angels are going to go all out for Cole, but I mean, teams would be stupid not to go all out for Cole. So I'm not too worried about that.
No, yeah, I'm not doing this yet. I don't have the energy or the mental capacity to go through these tweets that long-winded ways of just saying what we already know. Like, the Angels are expected to go all out for Gerrit Cole, who could prefer the West Coast, but the Yankees still in on him. It's like, all right.
The Yankees, it's going to come down to money. I mean, it's the same, like Sabathia said, if you give him enough money, then he'll go wherever. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, what we went to the Fangraphs Live, the Effectively Wild taping on Thursday, which was a ton of fun. I mean, I had a good time beginning to end. You know, everybody that podcasts or works for Fangraphs seems really nice, really knowledgeable, really funny. And then you had Lindsay and Mark there from The Athletic.
And Mike Petriello, you know, from MLB.com, another great
yeah.
baseball mind.
Yeah, just tons of knowledge and, you know, tons of firsthand knowledge of the team. And one of the most telling things, and Lindsay kind of kicked it off, was saying that the Yankees know that now is the time to go for it, which was encouraging to me because last year didn't seem like this was the time. And I thought, and Mark said the Yankees will get Gerrit Cole. He actually said that. If you go back and listen, because
yeah,
I heard it live and I got so stoked
like, about it.
I sat up. He's like, you know, the Yankees are going to go get Cole. And I'm like, all right. Like, Mark and Lindsay both know they're around the team every day, and Mark is like an MLB insider across the whole industry, so he knows, and so that got me kind of pumped up. And I know you're not trying to get excited about it, but it's not like I got you know, some who was the guy last year about the Machado stuff, Dan Clark. It's not like I have Dan Clark telling me the Yankees are going to be active in free agency. It's Lindsay and Mark saying the Yankees have reached a realization that this is the window now. They need to go out all out. And that gets me excited. And I hope it's Cole. If it's Strasburg, that's cool too. So that kind of excited me. And the other thing that got me feeling good is just that Mark was talking about, when he talks to the other teams, how scared they are of the Yankees and the way they do things. So maybe the Yankees know a lot more than we do. I mean, I would say it's definite, especially the way we talked about DJ LeMahieu and Mike Talkman this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. No, that's indisputable. I mean, their analytical staff, and I can't remember who mentioned it on the panel, but that the staff is probably even bigger than what we think, because they could be under like other job titles, but really do assist.
Contractors, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they're probably exposed to other types of technology and ways to evaluate players that maybe we don't even know about, and that's how they're able to unearth these hidden gems like Talkman and Gio Urshela. So, no, you're right. If I definitely will bite the bullet about my angst over not signing a guy like Machado last season because LeMahieu was put up what turned out to be a top 10 in the MVP voting kind of season and then was just as fantastic in the postseason. I think more of the anger than even not getting Machado specifically was just like what this trend has kind of represented of late, which was an overall reluctance to make a big splash and be the Yankees and spend that kind of money. So then when someone comes up who is a clear bona fide superstar, catapults you into World Series favorites like Gerrit Cole, that's the time to spend the money. So until it happens, as encouraging as the panel was listening to Lindsay and Mark, I don't know. I'm just not willing to. I'm not going to be sold until I see the breaking news on Twitter that the Yankees signed Cole, is basically what I'm trying to say. Because last offseason was just too frustrating.
Yeah, that's fair. But I don't know. It got me a little more hopeful than I was going in. So
Yeah, that's fair.
that's all you want. You just need hope. Just like, the whole thing about Rogue One is just you want hope. So
Yeah,
that's
that's
it.
true.
Cool.
Well, speaking of Lindsay, she just put up the Yankees All-Decade team, part of the cool All-Decade series that The Athletic has been doing with everything, pretty much. I mean, Jason Stark did the one about everyone across the league. No surprise, Mike Trout was number one. Should be by far. I don't even think it's close. But I don't know. Do you want to go through this All-Decade team and see if you? I'm looking. When we first started recording, I was looking at the position players, and honestly, I feel like top to bottom, this is. I mean, this might be exactly what mine would be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything really surprised me, probably because they used war. There's two things on there that actually were of interest to me. One is, did you see who had the best Fangraphs war for a pitcher, for a reliever, in the decade?
I didn't look yet, but I'm going to guess it was Chad Green 2017.
Incorrect.
Oh,
Dellin
wow.
Betances 2014.
Oh, okay.
3.0 F4. I mean, and we had Mo for, 4 years. 10, 11, 12, 13. Oh, well, not 12 because he got hurt.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, that surprised me. Yeah, Chad Green 2017 is on there, but David Robertson 2011 is actually above him. Michael Pineda's 2015 season makes the list,
That's so funny.
which speaks to the decade.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. But no, I thought the lineup was pretty much, well, not the lineup, but the positions is pretty much what you have. I mean, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you have Sanchez at catcher, who your 2017 Gary Sanchez. You have Teixeira at first, Cano at second, Didi at short, and A-Rod at third. I'd say A-Rod's the only surprise there because I feel like you forget how good he was in 2010, 11, and 12. I don't. I mean, if you think Russell Martin was better than Gary Sanchez, that's interesting. And then the outfield: Gardner in left, Granderson in center, Judge in right, and Giancarlo Stanton at DH. I don't think there's really anything surprising in this list. I mean, there's definitely some names that jump out, like Kevin Youkilis was the starting first baseman in 2013 on opening day. Brian Roberts in 2014. There's some good throwbacks like that. But overall, I didn't find it all that surprising.
Yeah, the only thing that surprised me, obviously, like we said, this list is going with Fangraphs WAR and to help determine this list. I was surprised that 2010 Brett Gardner is in left. I thought you could have easily picked this year's Brett Gardner because of his power spike.
I guess just against the rest of the league, because there was the power spike, it gets, it gets normalized.
Yeah, so that was, I think that was the only one where I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I could have seen it going a different way. But, I mean, 2017, Gary Sanchez, by far the most valuable Yankee catcher of the decade. 2012, Cano is probably one of the most productive players on this list. He is the most productive player. Oh, wait, nope. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm forgetting about 2017 Aaron Judge. Duh.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, man. How about that outfield? Because you also forget just how incredible 2011 Curtis Granderson was.
And 2012. He had, 40 homers both years?
Yep.
I still remember the last game of the season. I was there, and Granderson hit two, and he almost stole the Triple Crown from Miggy. Because he was one behind at that point. He would have had to share it. I caught a typo in here. 2014 DH was not Rafael Soriano. It was Alfonso Soriano. But, oh, my God, when you look at the DHs, Nick Johnson, Jorge Posada, Raul Ibanez, here's a classic, Ben Francisco, Alfonso Soriano, A-Rod, Matt Holliday, Giancarlo Stanton, Luke Voit. It got better as it went along, I guess, but that was a tough start to the decade. At DH,
man, I'm looking at the pitchers again, and obviously 2016 Tanaka was great, but imagine he stayed healthy in 2014.
Yeah, that was pretty intense, a pretty awesome start to his career, but then he had the UCL tear, which happens,
and has somehow pitched through it ever since. And been perfectly fine.
Yep.
But yes. Yeah,
so interesting, by the way, the Yankees of the decade that had the best ERA for starters, CC Sabathia and Masahiro Tanaka, both of which got massive contracts. It's like you should do that.
Yeah, again, I mean, Ellsbury's the outlier in that situation.
Yeah, but like he's not even an outlier. It was just like that's one of those things you're like, I just have to delete this data point because whoever entered it made a mistake. It was awful.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, it was interesting. I don't know. That's it. That's all that's going on. We got Thanksgiving coming up. It's quiet. I wonder what it was like when Theo Epstein slept on Curt Schilling's couch on Thanksgiving weekend.
God knows. Something I would never, ever, ever want to do.
God knows what sort of conspiracy theory Schilling was spewing at the time.
Yeah, I would want no part of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sleep there either.
Also, just continuing with the athletic all-decade stuff, which has all been a lot of fun, even outside of baseball. But they also came out with the best games of the decade.
Oh, I haven't seen that one
yet.
Yeah,
so the list starts with a Yankee game. It was, unfortunately, number 20 of the 20-game countdown is game 6 of this year.
That was it wasn't a fun ending, but yeah, that's a classic game where you have a team, back and forth, battling, and, the LeMahieu home run is such a great moment, but like the Rajay Davis home run, it just kind of gets lost. It's just in history.
Yeah, and then it's the first two on this list. You don't get another Yankee game till 8 on the list, but this one is certainly warranted. September 28th, 2011, Yankees-Rays, the Longoria walk-off, which was still probably the wildest and coolest night of baseball in the history of the sport.
Yeah, when you figure out that you had 4 games going on that were that impactful, I wouldn't disagree. So the only 2 Yankee games on there are 2 Yankee losses.
I believe that's really it.
Really upset.
Top game of the decade. I think it's a. Let's see if you can guess it, but it would have been my pick.
Game 7, 2016.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yep. But yeah, that's it.
What's number 2? What's number 2?
I closed out of it, but I think it was 2014 Game 7.
See, I'd almost put Game 6 of 2011 World Series above that. That was such a great game.
Maybe it was.
I mean, the Cardinals went down to the last strike twice, or last out twice. That was a good game.
I just went back into it, I'll tell you. Oh, you're right. Yeah, it was game 6, 2011.
Oh, I'm just saying that's what I pick. I'm just saying, you know. Yeah, there were a lot of we saw a couple 7-game World Series this decade, and you know, we're pretty lucky. I mean, for everybody that says baseball's dying, I mean, you had 2011, 2016, 2014,
yeah.
And then this year, and 2017. So you had 4 7-game World Series, or 5. I'm losing count, like Francesa.
And they were all really exciting 7-game series. It wasn't even like some 7-game series you get in the NBA. We're just like, it's a blowout.
You know what game I would have as one of the top ones? The and you don't have to open the list. I don't really care if it's on list. But the Jose Bautista bat javelin throw game.
It was on there.
Yeah. I just with what happens with the throw, the inning or 2 innings, before, whenever the hell that was, that was just such a fun, exciting game to watch. And I remember just, you know, that's what makes baseball awesome. You get like these unforgettable moments and everything like that. And I don't know. For me, maybe it's because I'm not such a big fan, but I don't really see that in other sports. Like even, you know, in hockey, you have a couple moments here and there, but it's not like this whole game was back and forth and intense and stuff like that. And I don't know. I feel like in football, when you have crazy games like that, it's just like whoever gets the ball last is probably going to win. Is sort of your thinking going into it.
Yeah, that's definitely unless, a feeling
unless,
sometimes.
Unless you throw the ball on, you know, 2nd and 1 in the Super Bowl. Anyway.
That cost me a lot of money.
It won me a lot of money. I was so excited. I was jumping up and down. But anyway. So, Thanksgiving's this week. What Yankee things are you thankful for?
I'm thankful that Gleyber Torres is only 20. What is he? Is he 23 now? Because I know he
might.
He was about to turn. But I'm thankful Gleyber Torres is only about to be or just turned 23 years old, because he is.
You got a couple weeks. He turns 23 December 13th.
All right. Well, I'm thankful that we have one of the youngest, most bona fide superstars in the game. He's so much fun to watch. That would be my first thing I'm thankful for.
Cool. That's a good one.
You know what I'm also thankful for is that we're talking about the decade, and you know, Yankee fans would consider it a pretty big failure because there weren't any World Series. I'm pretty thankful that this kind of decade is considered a colossal failure among many, because it just shows you how competitive the team always is. I mean, can you imagine, like, I think of like Meg Rowley at the Fangraphs panel, like imagine growing up a Mariners fan. The decade consists of no playoff appearances. The Yankees we got to see in what, 3 ALCS this decade, and postseason appearances in every year except 2. I mean, there was still plenty of great moments. So
yeah,
for that to be considered failing, I'm pretty thankful that that's the bar.
Yeah, I mean, they 4 ALCS appearances, right? 10, 12.
Oh, yeah, 10. Yeah, of course. And the awesome comeback in game 1.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you think about the decade as a whole, the worst year is probably 2013, I would say. Maybe 2014. I know it was Jeter's last year, and you have the unbelievable walk-off, but I think the 2014 team was more disappointing because 2013 you had all the injuries that had cropped up, and the team was older. But they also still fought at the end. I remember that series they had against the Red Sox where A-Rod hits the home run, and after they got Soriano, it really felt like they were making a run, and they did push Boston into September. But the 2014 team just lacked a lot of life. And like, at least in 2013, you got that little jolt right after the Soriano trade that got you excited. But yeah, I mean, I still think none of the teams were eliminated with more than a week to play. I could be making that up. But I mean, even in 2016, they stayed alive when Teixeira hits the walk-off grand slam against Boston, which ruins their clinching party. Which was great.
You had Gary that year too.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. Like 2016, even if they had been eliminated with 2 weeks left, it was so exciting because you had Gary break onto the scene. Even though he struggled, the Judge and Austin home runs was just such a signifying moment of the changing of the guard and what was a signal of what was to come. And they arrived really early in 2017. What was your favorite year of the decade?
2017, I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, I agree. I'd probably put 2019 tied with 2012. I had a lot of fun in 2012.
It's pretty easy to forget just how wild 2012 was, like even down the stretch of the regular season, holding off Baltimore, and then
Oh,
obviously
yeah.
an epic ALDS between the two.
Yep, that was a good series. And then they just kind of floundered against Detroit, but whatever. Jeter broke his ankle, and that was all she wrote. So, yeah, that's it. So what am I thankful for? I'm just thankful for the Greg Bird home run against Andrew Miller. We'll just leave it at that. No, I mean, I'll probably say, you know what I'll say I'm thankful for? Postseason Tanaka.
That's a
That
good one.
was so much fun to watch. And I love watching a pitcher just go to work that's not super overpowering and just crafty. And in the postseason, Tanaka just stifles people. And it's awesome. So I'll say I'm thankful for postseason Tanaka.
Yeah, no, that's a great one. There is definitely something really endearing about a pitcher who's not just blowing people away, but like you said, is crafty and just seems to shut down top offenses in the most intense spots of the season, which Tanaka has done his whole career. And it's fun to watch, especially because he gets emotional and he gets pumped up on the mound after a big third out or something, and can definitely tell how much he wants it. And oh man, I really want him to win a World Series. So they should
Yeah,
get Cole.
the post game picture will just be incredible.
Yeah.
And tweet from Tanaka will just be amazing. So that's a good one. And yeah, that's a I guess all right, let me ask you a decade question. You got to throw out one game. The 2017 wild card game or Jeter's last home game with the walk-off. You have to have not been at one of them. Take which one you eliminate and you watched from home.
Probably the wild card game.
Gotcha. Yeah, Jeter's last game transcended baseball.
Yeah.
I poked my nose into a bit of a Twitter argument. I think it was Sunday night about Jeter's defense.
Which isn't good. I mean, it's
Well,
fine to admit that.
okay,
Like,
so yeah, that's so yeah, people were saying that, you know, you can't judge a player you've never seen by the numbers, and Jeter wasn't that bad, and blah blah blah. And I'd like to see somebody that actually watched him play his whole career. And although I was 8 years old in 96, I probably started watching at least 100 games a year in 97, so I think I'm qualified to have seen his whole career, quote unquote. And I said, like, as he got older, you noticed he really couldn't go to his left that well. But if you're judging Jeter by his range and statistics, there's a couple things you need to keep in account. One, they really didn't start tracking this until what, 06, 07 is when they really started doing a lot of the tracking and stuff like this. So you're missing a lot of his 20s, which is when people are more athletic. And also, if you're judging Jeter by that, you're missing the point of Jeter. It's the captain, the heads up stuff. You know, the unconventional things is what made him so exciting, like the jump throw, like the flip play, like the relay throw to get Teimo Perez out in the World Series. And just because he doesn't have the greatest range doesn't discount all of that other stuff. So there's like a balance there, and I feel like everybody feels like they have to take one side or the other, and there's nobody that can meet in the middle. But since Jeter is like your boy, I mean, I think Teo Martinez should be a, you know, unanimous Hall of Famer. I'm pretty biased, but you know, since you're a little less biased than me, what do you think about the whole Jeter defense debate?
I think it's warranted. I think for a large part of his career, he was not valuable in the field. But like you said, I think watching 100 games a year of Jeter from probably like 98 or something like that, I would say, you definitely it was definitely glaring his awareness in the field and how much he used that to kind of mask just how deficient he could be at times with his range. And with his bad range, maybe we don't get the flip throw. You know, like maybe he just gets to that ball and the play seems more routine. Or the grounder up the middle in the 98 World Series where he made that crazy, like, contorting his body to make that ground out. What was that, game three?
Yeah, I think so. I know it was in San Diego.
Yeah. So, like, maybe that play
Take
looks
back
way...
San Diego.
Maybe that looks way more routine. But I don't know. It's just silly to me. Like, I think it's kind of universally known that Jeter wasn't that great a defender. But he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So, like, it's as simple as that. I don't know why it's turned into such a spirited argument. I guess it's just because there's people that are just clinging, like you said, clinging so hard to each side. And for me, who's, you know, I don't know, we're talking about my favorite baseball player of all time. I can easily say, like, yeah, he wasn't a great defender. He's still a Hall of Famer. And just leave it at that.
I find it funny that people started trashing Jeter's defense after Tino left. Just throwing that out there. Actually, I was looking at Jeter's baseball reference page, and he had some amazing, amazing years. Like, 09, I mean, 99 is just insane.
Yeah, and 2006.
Yeah, and 06, where he got robbed of the MVP. But, I mean, even on his offensive numbers alone, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I don't understand the need. Like, there's plenty of things that you could kind of jump on Jeter for that he's done post-career as an owner of the Marlins. But his defense is not something you need to, like, take a huge stand about. He was a subpar shortstop in terms of range, but did a lot of great things out there. And, you know, for, what, 14 years of his career or 13 years of his career, he was an elite offensive player at a position that doesn't always have that. I know they had the beginning of the 90s where that was, you know, or the end of the 90s where you had all the great shortstops, but it's interesting. But anyway, in seasons where they played at least 50 games, who had more years of negative wins above replacement, Tino or Jeter?
I mean, probably Jeter, but he had way more seasons where he was on the field.
Yeah, Jeter. That's so Jeter was more of a negative contributor than Tino. just you know, so the Hall of Fame committee gets that down.
Yeah.
No, that was only Jeter's 95 season where I was surprised. I think he played like 51 games, I saw, or appeared
I thought
in
it
that.
Was just 15.
Maybe I'm making it up. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's plate appearances that I was thinking of.
Yeah, that could
It must be plate appearances. So
it was 15 games, right?
Yeah, something like that. And then 2013, where he played like through the broken ankle and all that stuff. But yeah, that was it. But anyway, I just busting your chops. That's it. Jeter should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't care if he's unanimous or not, because I don't care either. People.
But can we also, real quick before we wrap up, say that it's also, can we please stop with the just Jeter ballots? And
oh yeah, that's awful. I mean, why is it Larry
him?
Walker a Hall of Famer?
I know. That really bothered me. Like, I can't wait to see Jeter enshrined into the Hall of Fame. But man, he should be enshrined alongside people that are on this ballot and have probably more Hall of Fame credentials than him. how do you vote just Jeter when Larry Walker's on the ballot, when Barry Bonds is on the ballot, Roger Clemens, like that. It's, I don't know, it's insane. And to just do it in a way to, like, honor somebody at the expense of other people who are trying to be enshrined in the highest level of baseball acknowledgement, like, that's just bad.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I mean, Larry's only on four out of seven ballots so far. It's insane.
Yeah, that's absurd.
It's his last year. I don't know.
The
anyway.
people knock down the credentials of guys that played in Colorado way too much.
They put a baseball team there. What else? You know what I mean? Like, what else can you do?
Yeah.
Move the team if you're not going to put anybody in the Hall of Fame. Why, as long as they play, it's insane. And Larry Walker was just as good away as he was at home.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
Anyway, I'm getting upset about the Hall of Fame. It's boring off season so
I
far.
know. Yep.
But I shouldn't say that because Atlanta and White Sox have done things. So hopefully that'll spark the market to go off a little earlier, at least with the non-elite guys, which is always interesting to see where guys wind up, and then you forget about it, and then the White Sox are coming into Yankee Stadium, and you're like, oh, I forgot they had this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So that's it. What are you looking forward to this week?
I guess just coming home for the weekend. Got to work on Thanksgiving and cover all the rivalry football games up here, but then I'll be coming down right after Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah, excited for a nice weekend away and
A three-game set.
yep.
Cool.
Yeah, what about you?
Oh, since you didn't take it, I'm taking Mandalorian.
Nice, yeah.
I started rewatching all of the Star Wars movies in preparation for that, and I made it through Revenge of the Sith last night. So now, pretty much the rest of the movies I enjoy. Because even though a lot of people like Revenge of the Sith, I am not one of them.
I am one of them, admittedly. I liked Revenge of the Sith. What I have to push myself to get through Attack of the Clones.
Attack
Like,
of Clones is the worst one.
Phantom Menace is an overall subpar movie, but at least it still has like the Darth Maul fight with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. So like there's still moments you can look forward to in that movie. Attack of the Clones was just an all-around terrible movie, if you ask me. But I liked Revenge of the Sith. I don't have to It doesn't take effort for me to get through that one, except when like Hayden Christensen talks too much.
What have I done? He goes from like, what have I done? Like crying to, I will do anything you ask in under 30 seconds.
That's true. Yeah.
But
Yeah.
I mean the last lightsaber fight is a very good one.
Yeah, that's great.
Although he didn't like Obi-Wan didn't have to say I have the high ground.
No, he kind of
So
yeah, he kind
yeah,
of
I
did.
mean like they've been jumping over each other the whole time. What's the difference of 5 feet in elevation?
He was trolling him. He was like, "I'm gonna tell you the reason that you're gonna be defeated, and it's still gonna happen." It was a good troll.
Interesting. Yeah, it was interesting for sure. And no, of course,
That
lives
part
back
sucks.
there.
That's the worst part of the movie.
I haven't watched the 4K ones on Disney. Have you yet?
No, I was gonna start today.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they left that no in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see. So, anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah, me too. Well, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hope it's filled with good food and followed up by some good hot stove nuggets so we actually have some things to talk about that is not Nestor Cortez being traded and things that are that minor, but
I'm gonna miss Nestor.
No, me too. He was a fun pitcher. The outcome wasn't didn't always reflect that, but it was fun watching you pitch, Nestor. And it was fun talking here, reminiscing about the decade and Jeter's Hall of Fame candidacy. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.